So I'm here with Eve Wood, and we're at Track 16 Gallery, and it's the last weekend of her show, Hanging in There to Hang On. Hi, Eve. It's nice to see you. We've been friends for a long time.
Hi, Mariana. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about the show and the title and what it's inspired by.
Okay, so the title is Hanging in There to Hang On, and most of the work in the show, or I'd say half the work in the show, has some relationship to the a wire hanger or a coat hanger. Mm-hmm. And the title is supposed to kind of encompass the anxiety that I have about being alive in the world today. It really feels more difficult to be alive today than it did, say, even 10 years ago. And so I think a lot of people are just sort of hanging in there, doing their best just to get through the day. And Lord knows I am. So I wanted to kind of address that in my own life, and also kind of, it is also a direct reference to some of the sculptural works in the show.
So you're thinking more broadly about hanging, and it's sort of like the coat hanger. It seems to have a kind of double entendre, and I know that language is a really important part of your work because you're a poet. Can you talk a little bit about that, about how you were thinking about that concept?
Yeah, well, a coat hanger is a utilitarian object that, you know, we use to hang clothes, coats, whatever, but it also has all of these other reverberations and metaphorical reverberations and literal reverberations. And I was making this work at the time when Roe v. Wade was overturned. And so it became even more important to me to make work that addresses that inequality. Mm-hmm. And so some of the work is not literally about hangers being used in abortions, but it has that echo. Mm-hmm. Of those, the lengths that women have to go to take care of their bodies and their lives. And I wanted to direct that, you know, directly touch on that or directly, you know, mention that without beating it to death. So there are hints and reverberations of that in the show. But also, hangers also have the language of hanging is sort of problematic too, because it kind of echoes back to, you know, all the things that are going on today with the Black Lives Matter movement and hangings, i.e. lynchings in the South during the Civil Rights Movement and the Civil War, and for decades and decades and decades, we've had this issue that never seems to go away. And so I think a lot of the work kind of is attempting to speak to that issue of injustice.
So I was wondering if you could just pick out one of piece that's nearby that you'd like to talk about and just sort of describe.
Well, since I'm talking about hangers and you know, racial injustice, I think this one's a really good one that speaks to that. This is called Two Friends, and the image originally was supposed to be just sort of a poetical image of two people spending time together. There's a young man with his head on the shoulder of an African American woman who's looking out kind of, you know, skeptically at her future, and they have hangers around their necks. So in this work in particular, I was speaking about the idea of something that restricts you that you're not even aware of. You know, they have hangers around their necks, but they're not really aware that those hangers are there. I mean, the man's eyes are closed, and he looks like he's just very at peace and happy. And yet, there are these implements of, you know, that are very kind of complicated around their necks. So, what is that? Are they being hung? Did they accidentally walk into a closet to get the hangers around their necks? And we don't know, but it's just kind of represents, metaphorically for me, it represents this sense of the darkness that lingers, the darkness around the corner, the thing that you don't know is coming. And certainly every single day that I wake up in this country, we see something, another injustice, another, you know, inequity, another person being killed because of the color of their skin. And those things trouble me, and yet they don't go away. They're always there. like a hanger kind of around your neck that you don't even, you know it's there, but you're not really sure how to get rid of it.
Right. It also, the image itself kind of, it looks like he's hanging on to her, you know, as though they could be perceived as hanging out as friends. He could also seem to be, he sort of looks like he's on her back a little bit, like he's hanging on to her for stability in some way.
Oh yeah, I think definitely. Originally it was called Two Friends Hanging Out with Hangers Around Their Necks. And so then I just cut it to just Two Friends because I thought, well, it's a little much. But yeah, I think that he is taking solace from her strength. She is the one in this image who is the stronger of the two, I think. And she's very aware of what's coming down that pike.
So you're bringing up some interesting things I think relate to the language, and certainly that's connected to your background in creative writing and poetry. It's fascinating to me over the years, because I've seen the evolution of your work over time now, that you do oscillate between objects and using objects in inventive ways. And a lot of that playfulness comes from free association with object and language, which I think is really a unique process to you in particular as an artist. Could you talk a little bit about the object images, the ones that are on the wall over here that are sort of, they look like they're actual, some of them incorporate, or they all in some way incorporate hangers as a visual element, but they're physically hangers, so they're modified or altered hangers.
Yeah, the show started off as an assignment that I gave to my students. I wanted them to, I teach at Cal State Northridge, and I teach a class on writing for artists. I mean, it's a modern art class, but I have them do writing assignments. And most of the students in that class happen to be artists themselves. So I gave them an assignment to make an artwork that was under $2 and to pick an object that they didn't have to pay for, or they only, you know, maybe it was $1.50. And so one of my students said, well, I love that idea, but can you do it? And would you do it? Or would you do it with us or show us? And so I was like, okay, you know, that's an interesting kind of, I'll do it. I said, I'll take you up on that. So I did, and the first one was that one with the long hanger. It's called Overkill. So I started off with this idea of making something that was cheap, but then it kind of took on all this new meaning, and I started realizing that I like making associations or connections between the simplicity of an object and then creating a metaphorical story or a metaphorical narrative in around that object. And so the kind of transformations are very simple in these pieces. They're usually only one or two or three at the most elements that I use within the sculptures. So they're like, I think of them as sort of sculptural poems almost.
That's fascinating. So the piece that you're talking about, or that you're describing, Overkill, it's like it's a wooden hanger that's attached to a really long dowel, so it starts to resemble like a weapon or an axe or a bow. It's fascinating. That's the, I think, hybrid use of language and object, which is something that I always notice in your work. There's an element of pun, but then also going beyond that, where the language and the image start to almost dissolve, where you forget why this thing is named what it's named. You know,
that's the hope I have.
Right,
you forget. Yeah,
it's fascinating. So I noticed there's also a lot of like birds and dinosaurs in the work. Could you talk a little bit about those images that keep showing up over and over again?
Yeah, well, birds are a familiar motif for me. I use birds a lot in my work, or I have for decades. I always go back to birds because I keep birds. I actually have birds as pets, and I rescue a lot of birds. And so personally, they're very meaningful to me. And I love their fragility, and yet there is also a strength. You know, birds are probably, for me, one of the most misunderstood creatures. You know, people say, oh, bird brains, you know, they're stupid. And they're actually not. They're extremely intelligent and complex in ways that people just don't understand. And I've spent a lot of time with birds. And so for me, they're like a talisman of goodness for me. Like I have very positive associations with birds that I don't always have with people. And so birds are kind of like stand-ins for me. And they're also a way for me to create kind of, there's a human relationship with the birds. I mean, the birds are sometimes anthropomorphized, like that one right there with the big bird, the big raven sitting next to the little man. You know, it's called My Date to the Church Social. But you're not sure whose date, who asked who out, you know? So there's that, I imbue them with meaning because for me, they're like people and they're incredibly intelligent and I feel an affinity for them. The dinosaurs kind of grew out of that because dinosaurs are the original birds. And so birds are the direct descendants or the closest link, I think, to dinosaurs. And I did a poetry reading here a few weeks ago and I was talking, somebody asked me about the dinosaurs and I think the dinosaurs are a literal manifestation for me of my own anxiety or attempting to kind of grapple with it or face it head on. And so in some of them, like this one, dancing with my dino, the guy is attempting to create a relationship to this creature that might tear him apart at any moment. But then again, they might be friends. So there is that kind of tension between the two.
Yeah, there's a beautiful kind of back and forth gestural response between the sort of leaning of the dinosaur in and then the responding leaning back of the dancer. And his sort of clothes are flying, the tie's flying a little bit, and he's sort of in motion, but there's also the sort of an ominous, perhaps he's about to stumble on a rock behind him too. And your work always does have that little bit of edge of like, maybe there's violence, maybe there's maybe doom, or maybe there's joy behind the corner. There's always like a, you feel like you're seeing a moment, a fragmentary moment of a larger narrative.
Yeah, you don't know what's coming down the pike. You know, you're just kind of, there's an intimation, but you're not really sure. And you just have to go through the experience in order to find out. No.
It's fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about the sculpture in the corner that's sort of like a, it's hangers that have been distorted and stretched and they're sort of arranged almost in like a Calder Moore wire sculpture style so that they stop looking like hangers for a while and then they reassert themselves as objects.
That's my favorite piece in the show. And it saddens me because it's the piece that has gotten the least amount of attention. I think the drawings overshadow it. But I feel for me that that is the heartbeat of the show. I wanted to make a sculpture that was just purely made of hangers, but not introducing another element like these where I have other elements kind of merged. So this was just, what can I do just with hangers themselves? And I'm very satisfied with it, but I think it gets lost in the corner because it's kind of, you know, it's hard to see because it's wire hangers. But also there's this kind of ephemeral quality. The piece is called The Death of Friendship. And it's kind of, as you notice, the top, the hanger is perfect. It's a perfect hanger. But as you move down, the hangers start to get distorted till the very end where the last hanger is completely smashed and going into the wall. And to me, it's about kind of the evolution or the process of being alive and people coming in and out of your life and you know, which hanger are you on which day and trying to kind of come to terms with change, that change is inevitable, you know, where our bodies change, our lives change, people move in and out of our lives. And to me, it's about grief and about losing a friend, and you know that it, sometimes those things happen, and no one is to blame. It's just organically, it's just friendships just die, mm-hmm. You know. And I'm a person who has struggled a lot in my life with kind of wondering why, like why did that happen? What could I have done to change that? And sometimes you can't. You just have to accept it, and that's a piece that sort of addresses that acceptance of that process.
It's interesting. I'm remembering one time when I first met you, I think I asked you, because you've had an incredible number of solo shows in the time that I've lived in LA at least, and at different galleries and different locations, and they're always very ambitious and focused and large, you know, and you've consistently over the last 20 years done that, you know, manifest that over and over again. And I once asked you what your secret was, and you said that it came from writing.
Alcohol? Is that what I said?
No. You told me that a very dear teacher once told you to, when you get a rejection letter, to take the poem out, put it in an envelope, and send it out again, and that was always your attitude with rejection, was to keep moving forward.
Yeah, I used to think that. I think that changes as you get older and your skin gets thinner and you're a little more like, oh boy, how? As you get older, especially as a woman, I think the art world is much harder on women than it is on men. Mm-hmm. So to stay the course and to keep doing this, my dad always says to me, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result, you know, and you know, so I wonder, am I insane for continuing to do this thing but as I always tell my students, it's a compulsion. It's not a choice. I have to do this. And, you know, I either do it in my living room and no one sees it, or I do it and I try to reach out to other people. So I've really tried to make an effort to change my relationship to that process, because in the past I used to be much more deliberate and aggressive about it, and now I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm just going to try to cultivate an organic approach to how things happen without being, you know, not checking out, being present, but being more kind of aware of that things happen when they need to happen, as opposed to, I'm going to make that happen, which is the way I did it when I was in my 20s and 30s. So, you know, you get old and that's what happens.
So there must be, I know that after a big show like this where there's so much work, it must feel a little empty in your studio or in your home right now. Are you working right now or relaxing or what's next?
I've actually, my partner, I was working in her house. I moved in with her. So I live with her in her house and we were sharing her office and wasn't working out. It was like, you got to get out of here. So I actually bought a shed called a she shed, you know, and at Home Depot, and I had it installed, and that's my studio. So it's very, very small. It's like 10 by 12, but it's a room. And as Virginia Woolf said, all you need is one room, a tiny little space, a corner. So that's what I use. So it's actually pretty filled because it's so tiny. And I've started thinking about a new project. Alexander Grant, who I did the book, The Artist's Prison, came to see the show last week or 2 weeks ago. And she suggested to me that I approach the Brand Library. She said they're doing really interesting things there and you should approach Stacey London. So I've been thinking about a project I'd like to propose to them about Virginia Woolf and Vita Sackville West. So kind of based on their correspondence. For years, we only had Vita Sackville West's letters to Virginia Woolf. And recently, her estate has released the letters that she wrote back to Vita. And so now we can read those, and they're absolutely extraordinary. Her letters are extraordinary. So I've started thinking about that and making drawings that incorporate some of their letters.
Oh, that's fascinating. I love that.
And it's called The Two V's.
Awesome.
Because they were lovers. They were together. They had a relationship. But at a time when, you know, that the early part of the 20th century, that was not embraced and people didn't really quite know what to make of them. And so I'm exploring that now a little bit.
Well, that's beautiful. Well, thank you so much for telling us about it and walking me through the show. It's just a gorgeous show, and it's wonderful to see this much work together in a lovely, large, lit space. You know, it's a beautiful...
Well, I feel very blessed to have, you know, had this show here, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.